civil litigation. This week, we are looking at the pre-suit investigation, and we're going to discuss interviewing. And in fact, next week, we're going to embark on a little interview project that you're going to complete. So after you finish this week, you should be able to identify items the client would bring to an initial client interview. Now, a client interview is different than a witness interview. You should be able to explain the importance of an interview checklist. You're always going to want to have a checklist. It looks like a form that somebody might fill out. You're going to be the person who fills it out. But think of it as a checklist. It's not the idea that you go and you fill out a narrative word for word of what the person's telling you. We're going to talk about active listening. I want you to look at the person, to see the person answer, and to write down notes. Put your focus more on the person and what they say and how they say it, as opposed to whether you record things verbatim. We're going to talk about basic interviewing techniques and tips. Anytime you interview anybody, especially a client, you do a post-interview memorandum where you give me not only the basics or the background for that interview, but also the impressions you have of that individual and their ability to testify. The things that we talked about last week regarding work product. That's work product. And then we'll talk about the cardinal rules of investigation. We'll also talk about a little bit about corporate information or finding corporate information. You were in business organization right now, and Professor Higgs will do a better job of that to give you an idea what that information is. We'll talk about, you had medical terminology. If you've had it, we cover how you get records. But we'll talk a little bit about that, and we've talked a little bit about medical records and how they come in as evidence. Physical evidence we've covered last week. And then we'll talk about important considerations when interviewing a witness or an expert witness. And a witness is, again, different than a party to a case. Investigation, generally, it's a gathering of facts. More specifically, it's a gathering of facts admissible in evidence. And we covered last week about admissibility or inadmissible, and the fact that when you're my paralegal and you're going out to do the investigation, I want you to be the shop vac and gather everything. And we'll sort it out once you get back to the office. Investigation is the term applied to the detective role of litigation. It involves a gathering of facts that ultimately will be, or hopefully will be, admissible in evidence. It helps us determine if we have a cause of action. Cause of action is a legal claim that if it's proven, and if there's no successful defenses raised, it's sufficient to lead to a judgment. On Blackboard, I provide, or in the slides, a list, an example of things that you might want somebody to bring to a client interview or provide prior to that interview if they have, say, an accident claim. They have a personal injury. You'd want any copies of medical bills if they have them. Again, if they have them. Depends on how long after the accident, whether or not they have those, right? If they have any medical records, and they may not. It may be, though, today, that they can access those medical records on their phone. Some of you may have that ability with your health insurance to access your records on your phone, which means you could probably get them also on your computer, which means you can probably print or save the PDF and provide to the lawyer or paralegal you might hire if you're in that predicament. An accident report. Now, an accident report is sometimes confused to be a police report, and it's not a police report in Illinois. There's an accident report that's completed anytime there's a vehicle crash or a crash involving a vehicle. Looks like a police report. It's got a lot of the same information. And if a crash results in more damage or over a certain amount of damage, then you're required to fill one out and send it into the Secretary of State. Photographs, if they have them, and again, a lot of times people have them because they record everything about their lives, and so they could be about to be pulled away in the ambulance and they're taking pictures of the mangled vehicles. Any photographs from anybody, including if it's an accident scene that's, you know, subject to being publicly or by private business recorded in some way in a photograph or video, try to get that. Relevant correspondence, anything from insurance companies, other parties, other lawyers, recent pay stubs or other records relevant to any lost wages claims, invoices or estimates on vehicle damage, and then anything else that's relevant that they may have in their possession that may go to the case. Now, interviewing tips, and we've covered this a little bit in this class. You've probably covered it in other classes that you had me for, especially family law. Whether it's the client or the witness, avoid leading questions. I want them to tell the story. Okay, so avoid leading them. You probably have a good idea about what you think they should say. Well, make them say it, or allow them to say it, I should say. Don't paint their testimony. Let them say it so you can see and hear them say it. You don't, you're not allowed to be afraid to ask tough questions. The tough questions are the questions like, so you said that you were coming from, Jim's Bistro on Prospect and you had dinner with your friends. Did you have any alcoholic beverages? How many? Over what period of time? What did you eat? Had you drank anything before you went to Jim's Bistro? Did you go anywhere after Jim's Bistro and before you got in your vehicle? Those are tough questions. They're not, you know, not questions you normally ask somebody. Do you have corrected vision? Did you have your glasses on at that time? Were you taking any prescription drugs? Were you taking anything else that's not a prescription drug? You remind them that, you know, if it's a client, what they tell you is confidential, and these are tough questions. If it's not a client, if it's a witness, you don't have the ability to tell them that what they tell you is confidential, but you still need to ask those questions. And what you do as far as telling them why you need to have those questions asked is just to say that's going to come out at some point. And it's better that you know the answers now than it comes up at trial or cross-examination. It's better to work from the general and then to the specific. Again, you're going to know things before you start the interview, some basic things, and you've even seen police reports or accident reports or other witness statements or anything like that, and if you do, you're going to start to develop your own impressions. We'll back off of those impressions. Work from the general, then to the specific. And that goes back with avoiding leading questions. Let them tell the story. And then if there are questions that you have out of that story, you can go back and ask. Obtain background information regarding the client's sources of that information. Okay, so from who, how reliable, who is that person to them, how do they know that person, all those kind of good things. You want to perform your investigation at the earliest possible date after the incident or occurrence. You want to do that because facts might, in a sense, change. Witnesses' recollections may fade. Important documents may be inadvertently destroyed before their importance is recognized. I gave you the example of the death case, wrongful death accident with the dump truck that hit the Honda Civic. That was a construction zone. That whole area was going to change within days. As soon as the state police was done with its accident reconstruction, they were going to give the approval of that construction to continue. And if I had waited a week or two to get my expert in there and to take photographs and do all the things I wanted to do or needed to do to document what it looked like at the time of the accident, it wouldn't look anything like that. So as soon as you can get out to that place and document, the better. It may take significantly longer to complete investigatory tasks than anticipated. So by starting early, the impact of delays is minimized. And then once facts become known, inevitably, they tend to raise new questions in other areas. They necessitate further inquiry and investigation. They lead to new facts. And so it's like a big snowball rolling down the hill, or a snowball that rolls down the hill and becomes a bigger and bigger and bigger snowball. It snowballs. The facts snowball. Now, the cardinal rules of investigation: perform the investigatory task at the earliest possible time. Accept responsibility for completion of those tasks. You accept responsibility. Don't put it off on somebody else. Unless you have the lawyer's permission to give it to somebody else, do it yourself. Confirm any telephone request by a memo to the file and by a letter or email to the party who made that request. So if you call somebody and you make a request for something or set up a time to meet or to take a witness's statement, confirm that you did that with an email. Make sure that you have their telephone number. Make sure that you confirm all the circumstances. And then the last one is, be thorough while being creative in your approach. You know, competency, right? Thoroughness and preparation. As you're preparing, as you're being thorough, also think about how you can be creative. Is there something you're missing or a different way to get what you think you might need or to cover something? And don't be afraid to do too much. You know, if you have a Google Maps overhead aerial photograph of an accident scene or an intersection, but it doesn't quite depict one of the key elements, don't be afraid to take photographs yourself. Or, if you have the ability, diagram it out. They're actually little template, I don't know if you remember these things, little plastic things you would put on paper to help you draw like vehicles. Or directions. And so maybe you find some good old-fashioned graph paper and you draw your own little two-scale document that shows the accident scene or the part of the accident scene that you want to document, and use one of those templates. But be creative, and don't be afraid to be creative. When we're dealing with a corporation as a party, we can find out from the Secretary of State whether the corporation is incorporated or registered to do business in our state. And if it's incorporated or authorized to do business, we can get the address of the principal place of business, the identity of the officers and their addresses, or the identity and address of the agent. And that's who we serve process on, any of those. And so serving process is making sure they get a copy of the complaint and they have to appear. Important stuff to know, because a lot of times you're suing a corporation. Some interviewing tips. Always identify yourself as a paralegal and explain what that means. You're not allowed to answer legal questions or give legal advice. Make sure the person knows who you represent and why you're there to talk to them. You know, you work for this party and you're there to get their impressions or what they saw and whatever it is. Establish a rapport with the client. If it's a client, you want to make sure they understand that what they tell you is confidential. While you can't answer their legal questions, you will take their legal questions back to the lawyer, and you will get answers, and you will come back to them with those answers from the lawyer. Make sure you have an outline or a checklist. I call it a checklist, but it's essentially an outline, and it looks a lot like a form, so it's even more confusing. There's places where you fill things in like a good old-fashioned form, but it's there to make sure that you don't miss anything. And typically, law firms have some sort of outline or checklist or client interview sheet for about every type of action that they have. And there's some of those found in ICL. So go to ICL and you'll find examples for, say, a personal injury case. And those of you who had family law know you can find those examples for divorce cases, child custody cases, things like that. The idea is you can vary the order, and sometimes the conversations take you in directions where you vary the order, but you cover all of the items you need to cover. You start with the broad questions. You allow the client to tell his story or her own story before you begin in a more focused inquiry. While you're doing this, you're taking notes. Notes are not transcription. You're not recording word for word. Now, if it's a client, typically I would not record what the client is saying. If it's a witness, I would ask if they mind if I recorded it so I could have it, you know, word for word. When you transcribe that and ask them to sign it, it's even better. But you get their permission. Mr. Jones is, this is Tom Higgins, and I'm here with Mr. Ed Jones. And Mr. Jones, you're here to talk to me about the accident that occurred on August 31st of 2019 at the intersection of Glen and University in the city of Peoria. Yes. Do I have your permission to record our conversation? Yes. Start asking your questions. The end, you conclude. This is Tom Higgins. I'm interviewing Ed Jones. I'm just concluding that interview, standing at the corner of University and Glen in the city of Peoria on whatever the date is today and the time, right? When you're talking to people, listen with your ears, but observe with your eyes. That's called active listening. Active listening allows you to see when somebody hesitates, when they appear to hold back on an answer. It allows you to see things like when they divert their eyes, when otherwise they're looking right at you, but when you ask them a hard question, they divert their eyes. That may or may not be a tell for the lack of truth. Now, you're not a lie detector test, but that would be something you would note then in your memo to me with your observations of the person and their ability to testify. Be sure to review the client's story and statements more than once. You may have misunderstood his or her meaning, or the client may have misspoken. Take the time to get the facts straight. You know, that time is before the interview's terminated, not after. You don't want to call them back later after you remember that you thought you had a question or needed clarification, and now you need to bother them again to get that clarification. One, that makes us, if it's a client, makes us look less incompetent. And two, if it's a witness, now we're inconveniencing them again. So keep those things in mind. Identifying possible witnesses. Now, the client's going to be the first source. And they're going to help us with the factual areas on which witnesses' testimony might be needed. Some documents, relevant documents, may lead us to witnesses. Police reports, medical records, news articles, internal memoranda, news stories. Once you find a witness, that witness may lead you to other witnesses. They may tell you about other people who were present, whether they know the names of them or not. You know, if they identify someone as being a worker at a particular business that was adjacent to the accident scene. And then eventually, once we're at court, the discovery process. We are going to have to disclose all of our witnesses to the other side, and they're going to have to disclose all their witnesses to us, and we match those up. And if there's anybody that they have that we didn't cover, then we need to figure out a way. And at that point, the way we talk to them is, you know, most likely going to be a deposition. Now, some factors that we need to consider when we're talking specifically about interviewing a witness compared to a client. Again, follow a checklist. You know generally what you want to ask, and you're always going to ask some basic same things of a witness or a client or anybody involved in anything that would fit in that realm. And that's basic background information, you know, where they live, how old they are, how many kids in their family, their education, their employment background, things of that nature. But then you're also going to get into the nuts and bolts of their background as far as their credibility. You might ask things like, do you have corrected vision? Were you on any medication on that date? Did you take anything that wasn't a prescription drug? Have any alcoholic beverages, etc. Trying to figure out if they have any reason to not have a good observation of whatever's going on. Take careful notes. Again, notes are not transcription. Just take notes. Active listening. See and hear what they say. And that's especially true with witnesses, because witnesses, I definitely want to know if they're likely to be telling a lie or not. They're credible. Identify the foundation for the testimony, and the foundation for their testimony is those things like where they were, whether they were able to see and observe, whether they're able to be truthful, whether they are truthful. Review the facts with the witness to verify for accuracy, so let them tell the story and then go back and review. Again, you always want to establish a rapport, but it's not the same type of rapport. I can't promise them confidentiality. But I can promise them that in a civil case, I'm going to try to settle it. And if I can settle it based on the things that they tell me or the facts that they tell me in a statement, I will. But I also want to let them know you may be called for a deposition. If you're called for a deposition, I'll make it as convenient as possible, so I need to make sure I have the ability to get a hold of you. You may be called for trial if it goes that far. And if it goes to trial again, we'll try to make sure you're inconvenienced as much as possible. And then you always want to progress from the generalized to the more focused follow-up. Again, you want them to tell the story and then you go in for the specifics. Remember that witnesses may be reluctant. If a witness has useful information, you need to appeal to their sense of justice. You need to get them to talk. And I mean, we've established this probably with all of you. Most people in society today take that attitude of, I don't want to be involved. I mean, they'll see something clearly wrong and walk or drive right by it and not say anything. And sometimes with good reason, right? I mean, people do crazy stuff and react in crazy ways. But if we don't get those witnesses to testify, do we get justice? Do we get to the fair and fully just result? And that's as true on the civil side as on the criminal side. If a witness is hostile, so they may have a relationship with one of the parties, indicate that you won't hesitate to just subpoena them and take the deposition if that becomes necessary. Now, most people aren't going to be hostile to you, but if they're, you know, related to or friends of the defendant, say, they may tell you, up yours, I'm not going to testify. Or I'm not going to give you a statement, I'm sorry. Okay, well then we'll have to take your deposition. And in all likelihood, they're going to be hostile to you then as well. But at least you know that. And that's part of the investigation. That's part of why we do what we do. You may have to work hard to accommodate witnesses on scheduling, and as you know from my ethics discussion, this is one of those areas where I say don't tread on somebody like that. Treat them like you'd want to be treated, and maybe you'll get something that's favorable or at least something that's fair. But if you don't treat them like you'd like to be treated and you treat them unfairly, they're going to do you. The most honest person will lie. So be flexible. You want to get to potentially neutral witnesses first. Those are witnesses who aren't related to either of the parties. Those are occurrence witnesses, happen to be on the corner or a car away. Don't share information about the case the witness doesn't need to know. You know, don't go tell them what the situation is with your client or how likely it is to settle or, you know, nothing that would tend to make those neutral people bias one way or another. Time's going to be limited, so ask your questions right away. If the witness is represented by an attorney which rarely is the case, but sometimes may be if they're a corporate employee or something, communicate through the lawyer. If they tell you, I'm represented by a lawyer, even if it's not going to end up, and you're sure it's not going to end up with that lawyer participating, you know, sometimes you'll want to talk to somebody and say, well, I'm represented by a lawyer, talk to my lawyer. And you find out they're represented by a lawyer in a divorce case, which isn't related to the thing that you're wanting to talk to them about as being a witness of an accident. You'll get that resolved, but always go back and talk to the lawyer. Don't go around the lawyer. With a client, when they tell us what they tell us, I don't ask them, I don't take a recorded statement, and then I don't transcribe that or ask them to sign it or verify that it's accurate. That's unique to the witness. And if you have a transcription, you'd want to get it, or a recording, you might want to get it transcribed, have them review it, and have them sign off on that. What that does is then once we get to a deposition or trial, you can give them a copy of it, and they can rely on it, but they're also going to be beholden to it. They're not going to change their story. If trial comes up a year and a half later, then I can say the light was red when the light was green. And then obtain their address, and more importantly, their cell phone and email in the event that a subpoena for a deposition is required, or you need to get a hold of them for a deposition or for trial. And remember, people move a lot, so make sure it's accurate. For experts, experts are those witnesses that have no connection to the action itself, but they have a specialty in a particular field, and they testify about facts or circumstances related to a particular issue. We hire experts to analyze things and give an opinion based on their expertise. So you have to familiarize yourself in that relevant field. So Michelle Weghorst will tell you that she became an expert in things like reflex sympathetic dystrophy. I'm not going to explain what that is. You can go look it up yourself, but she became an expert in it. She became an expert in a lot of things related to trucking litigation. There's a good reason why she and I, if we see semis on the highway, we either fall back or we figure out how we can get ahead of that semi. We handle trucking litigation. She became an expert on the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, a federal act. So that's what you do as a paralegal and a lawyer. The lawyer has to do it too, but a lot of times the initial legs of that, the initial parts of determining what a particular field is and who are the experts in that field falls on the paralegal, and you'll get to do that. You contact obvious experts such as treating physicians who've already been consulted by the client. And a lot of times it's those people, treating physicians as a prime example, are going to actually be your expert. They're going to be an occurrence witness to a degree, but they're going to be an expert on what the person's treatment was, especially surgeons, you know, if somebody did surgery because of the injury. Sometimes we go to companies, research facilities or universities. I'm part of a company or part of a panel for legal malpractice and some other things where if somebody's looking for a lawyer, and something that I'm out there for, what they do is then they look to hire me to have me review the case. The company arranges the fee, you pay the company then pays me, but they keep a whole list of people that are experts in different things. So that may be something as well. And then finally, legal publications or other law firms. You may find other lawyers in town who have had an expert that they would recommend on a particular thing. Once you have the potential expert, be sure to obtain a resume or a curriculum vitae so you can assure yourself of that expert's qualifications and do your own background check, and it's easy to do on social media for that person. Horrible to find out that person was, lost their license and whatever their expertise was, or had some bad thing reported in the media after you've already retained them. So do your due diligence with those experts. That concludes our pre-suit investigation and interviewing part of the course. Week 4, a fourth of the way through the semester. And we'll talk about this more on Tuesday night. Stay safe. Have a good Labor Day weekend.